Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to Third Stream View. This is your host, the Mighty PK, talking to you for Monday, October 17th, 2011. And my music finally came on, but that won't stop me. As always, I'd like to thank our hosts, the network at bbsradio.com, for the suits in the office there, who, along with myself, are proud to promote free speech and alternative media from the status quo corporate Zionist media opinion cartel. And tonight, I'm going to be winging it because my guest had a scheduling conflict, so he can't make it. Maybe next time. But I will talk about current events and some stuff that's going on, stuff that might interest you because it interests me. And I'll be taking calls if anybody happens to call in to question me, to debate me, to ridicule me, if you dare. And the number is 888-429-5471. 888-429-5471. So, and I would like to say hi to our friends, I'd say our adversaries, those in the CIA and the FBI and the other national security sheeple, policy wonks that monitor these shows, trying to find evil wherever it may be, when actually the real evil is them, these fellow Americans oppressing us, stepping on us, manipulating the news media, manipulating events, which they do. And hello there, CIA, FBI, national security folks. Are you proud of what you do? Do you like eavesdropping? Do you like collecting information on innocent, good Americans who would really be disgusted to know the lengths of what you try to do, what you do, such as last week's manipulation of the supposed assassination attempt on the Saudi ambassador? And by the way, I like that Saudi guy. I've heard him speak before. He's pretty good. I didn't find much problems with him, unless it's been a while since I've heard him speak, but I thought he was a pretty nice guy. But anyway, I was laughing, sad to say, I was laughing when I heard this whole attempt, as if Iran, whom Israel and the U.S. wants war with, would be foolish enough to do something about that. I mean, Iran has its problems, as other countries do. I don't agree with a lot of their laws and their political repression, but I agree much less with attacking them or bombing them. And once again, Iran's president did not say, contrary to the lies of the Zionist media, the pro-Zionist, pro-Israel, pro-Jewish lobby, Iran's president did not say he wanted to wipe Israel off the map. Iran's president did say something close to the effect of, just like the Soviet Empire regime vanished from the face of the earth, so do I look forward to, or so will the Zionist regime vanish from the face of the earth. Now, that's a big difference between saying you want to wipe somebody off the map. Iran can't do that. Israel has, what, 200 to 300 nukes that they won't own up to? So Iran is not interested in attacking Israel. If Iran does get a nuke, which I ain't worried about, then other countries don't mess with you, like North Korea, India, Pakistan, China, Russia. Once you have a nuke, Uncle Sam and other countries back off because of the damage you can cause. And I don't fear those other countries. I mean, if Washington's worried about it, they can station a submarine, which subs can go anywhere. They can station those or a ship near these troubled countries, and they can knock down anything one of these countries may try to shoot. But you don't hear this logic in the news, because that would be contrary to the neocons and the pro-war crowds, globalist, Zionist aims. So, and again, Iran has about 25,000 Jews living there. And They've been there for centuries. Not that they're 25,000 years old. They've been there for centuries. They're not threatened. They're not trying to get the hell out of the country. So, in fact, you can see footage on YouTube of Ahmadinejad from about 2 or 3 years ago when he was visiting the U.S. to speak at the U.N. You can see there's about maybe 10 or 12 anti-Zionist rabbis that he meets with, and they give him a sort of a big silver chalice or some ornate kind of gift towards the end of their meeting with him at a big table in New York somewhere. A nice table in this nice big room, and Ahmadinejad has a bodyguard or two with him, and the rabbis are talking to him and wishing blessings. And so it's very interesting to see. And I'm very partial to this this crowd of the Jews Against Zionism. I don't have their exact name in front of me, but you can look up their website, Jews Against Zionism. You'll see what they have to speak about. They may be small in number, but I believe that their philosophy and their reasoning is correct. And they're people of peace. They feel so much pain, and they loathe what's happened to Palestine and the Palestinians. They say that God did not intend the Jews to set up the state of Israel because they disobeyed. They can only have an Israel after the Messiah comes. Well, a lot of these Zionist Christians mean that, you know, they would like to probably proceed and have wars. Their reasoning is that we have more wars in the Middle East, or the war to end the rest of the wars in the Middle East. Little Wilson there for you. And then Jesus will come. They want to bring him back even sooner, I guess. So this whole thing about Iran, what a scam. And not just because it was convenient for Eric Holder, whose blatant lies about was Fast and Furious supplying guns to, denying much extensive knowledge of supplying guns to the Mexican cartels. I mean, the inmates are running the asylum, folks. You know, and just when, if they take one of these cartel big shots down, one of these drug lords, someone else takes their place. It's just how it is. Again, if anybody wants to call in, the number is 888-429-5471. So these cartels with the free guns Uncle Sam gave them that they could trace. I mean, did Uncle Sam not think that that they would kill a lot of people in the meantime before they actually traced the guns? I think they gave something like 2,000 of them to the drug cartels. Can you believe that? I mean, that's, you know, well, why wouldn't you believe it? I mean, the CIA is a big drug runner. CIA, Cocaine Importation Agency. I mean, they're doing it in Afghanistan now. They've done it during the Vietnam War in that Golden Triangle, bringing heroin back to the States. In fact, I've recently read that they, and I had heard this elsewhere, that they even put it into the cadavers of dead Vietnam War GIs, and somehow they were labeled so they would know which cadaver had, which body bag had the drugs. So they are involved in that. Of course, they'll deny everything, yet they are the masters of deception, as they are with their first cousins and buddies, Britain's MI6, and, of course, Israel's Mossad. So, again, there's absolutely no reason to attack Iran or cause trouble with Iran. And if Israel wants to attack Iran, let them do it on their own dime. Not any more subsidy from Uncle Sam. No more free American-made murder weapons. Let them fight their own battles. No more proxy wars for Israel. That's why I like to define Iran as Israel requires American naivety. Now I want to move on to the Occupy Wall Street situation. And I may have mentioned it last week. My view on Occupy Wall Street, which of course is the correct view, is my view in opinion of this Occupy Wall Street movement is very narrow. I'm with them on some specific things. I deplore crony capitalism. I'm totally against the bailouts, tax-funded bailouts. If the banks want to bail somebody out or private people, that's different. with private funds. But I'm totally against tax-funded bailouts, totally against corporate welfare and corporate socialism and state capitalism. Those last two, corporate socialism and state capitalism, is where the line is clearly blurred. I don't know, is that an oxymoron, clearly blurred? Where the line is blurred between industry and government, especially big business and government. A lot of these big companies, they want socialism for themselves. They want to be on the gravy train for themselves. And they want capitalism for everybody else. Is there a call out there? Do I see that there's a call out there? Looks like I see a note there. No callers. Okay, I thought I saw a call. Okay, no callers only. Anyway, where was I? Yes, my the parts that I agree with about Occupy Wall Street. Okay, so I deplore crony capitalism, which of course is taking care of your buddies sort of covertly, bailing them out, giving them treats off the taxpayer, giving them privilege. I'm totally against political privilege for the politically connected. I'm an advocate of free market, competitive, laissez-faire capitalism, the free enterprise system. If I could be down at especially Wall Street, if I had my little podium, I would love to clarify things because these people need a leader. They're sort of on the right track, yet they're way off usually on economics and what their solutions are. And I would love to be down there, their leader, and setting them straight because they need intellectual direction on economics. And so back to what I'm in agreement with them, especially the corporate welfare, like I spoke about, I'm totally opposed to corporate welfare, very much against the wars. And I am not a pacifist per se. I'm totally for gun rights, gun ownership. I believe in practically no gun laws, except when you buy a gun, if you're they can look up to see if you're a criminal, a nutcase, etc. That's about it. But if you use a gun other than self-defense, sporting, you know, then you pay a harsh price for that. You know, armed robbery, murder, you know, all these sorts of things that won't be tolerated. But there, in my society, when you get rid of so much government, and especially the drug war, you'll have a lot less crime. You'll have more employment. So back to the Wall Street crowd. Now, something interesting that I've seen is, and now they're trying to frame it also, is that there's a lot of anti-Semitism there. Well, I've been listening to some of this stuff and doing researching it, and I'm in agreement on a lot of the comments I've seen critical of the Zionist bankers and even critical of Israel, because Israel has drawn this country into a mess, the quagmire in the Middle East. We don't need Israel as an ally. What they've created is their own ghetto over there. Talk about Jewish ghettos. That's what they've created. They've made a mess out of it. They put up huge walls with American tax dollars. It's the source. It's one of the main sources of terrorism directed against the U.S. And anybody who denies that or disagrees with that is denying reality. The terrorism against the U.S. is directed at the U.S. because of the federal government's support of Israel and the propping up of Arab dictatorships like the Shah, like Saddam, like Egypt, Syria, Jordan, these countries. That's where it comes from, and occupying them or having troop bases there in Saudi, all this sort of stuff. So I completely understand why they're pissed off and their anger and terror is directed at the U.S. at the U.S. And I, of course, I always like to separate the people between the federal government and the people. There's a big difference between the government and the people. Hence those bumper stickers that I like, which say, "I love my country, but I fear my government." I'm sure that a lot of us can relate to that. So back to this Wall Street thing and the Zionist thing. I've seen signs and people talking about criticizing Zionist Jews and Jewish bankers. And I want to, of course, narrow this down to the Zionist bankers or those particular Jewish part of the Jewish crowd that's involved heavily in Wall Street and government and the military and the gravy train for Israel, that crowd. And as I like to say, a lot of regular rank-and-file Jews have suffered greatly in other countries because of the actions of these Zionist imposters. They use the cloak of Judaism as a cloak and a shield to hide behind. And again, Zionism is mainly atheistic. A lot of these are the Ashkenazi Jews from Europe, Eastern Europe, and Russia who've populated Israel. They're not even Semites. They practice their religion as a tradition. So, yes, a lot of Jews have suffered because of Zionists. And there's some very, you can look on YouTube and find very interesting discussions and criticisms coming from anti-Zionist Jews. There are numerous, there's lots of them, and I think they're very brave for the positions they take, and they see what's going on too. So it's not like, you know, if they're already Jewish, I mean, that'd be like a black guy, say a very black skin, very dark skinned black person, being a racist towards blacks. I would think that the best you could say is that he might dislike black folks, but if he's the skin shade of Herman Cain, I don't see how he would be a racist per se against black folks. If he's just purely a critic of black people and the behavior of certain bunch of them, then that's not the same thing. So in the case of the Jews, if you criticize, if you're Jewish and you're critical of Israel or Zionism, especially if you publish about it or you have books on it or you speak publicly about it, you're always referred to as a self-hating Jew, followed by an anti-Semite. So that's the way they do things. So yes, this whole banking situation is, and as I understand it, the Federal Reserve. So that, sure, it's not part of the government; it's a private bank, but yet they are connected, definitely. And it's, as I understand it, it's owned by the Rothschilds and several Jewish Zionist, Jewish European banking families. And the Rothschilds tried to get a hold of the central bank of the U.S. back in, I guess, Jefferson's day and Jackson's day, and Jefferson and Jackson each helped to overthrow that Bank of the U.S. in their day. Jefferson, of course, the first Bank of the U.S., Jackson, the second Bank of the U.S. Well, now it's time to get rid of the Fed, or at least, as Ron Paul says, have a total open audit of the Federal Reserve to see where this money's going to, because the Fed is just a bunch of liars and manipulators. And once that cloak is pulled back, Americans will be shocked to see where this is going. So that is my take on the Wall Street thing. I wish they were more focused in their views, but I see where the anger and the frustration is coming from, because a lot of our young people, there's no jobs. You know, the job market is pretty dead, and this has been caused by the actions of the federal government, the Federal Reserve, causing the housing crisis. All of it stems pretty much back to the federal government. And as I'm fond of saying, yes, people blame the bankers, and a lot of what they did is despicable, and they're to be held accountable. But that's just the symptom. They're all tied into the source, which is the Federal Reserve System, which is the central bank of the U.S., dating back to 1913, a terrible year for the United States. 1913 gave us the Federal Reserve System and the federal income tax. So, and look what's happened ever since. It's destroyed the value of the dollar, the Federal Reserve, and taxes have gone up massively from what they were intended to, and that's always the case. So it's amazing how we got by till 1913 without the Federal Reserve and the federal income tax, yet we still had the military, we had roads, we had bridges. And, of course, the states had courts and police and firemen. How did we do that? Well, because we didn't need it. It's just an expensive drain on the economy. Washington is a very expensive middleman. So we have Obama now talking about his jobs program, which, and I agree with some of the Republicans on this, they just say it's like another stimulus package. Well, the first one didn't work. I mean, they haven't learned anything from the 20s when FDR created all this massive spending. It's just a temporary fix. It's like heroin. It doesn't work. So Obama wants more heroin for the economy or more alcohol for the alcoholic. You know, he's just trying to prop up a broken system. And he keeps talking about the infrastructure and roads and bridges. Well, as I like to say, rightly so, that's the duty of the states. Let the states handle their infrastructure. It's their infrastructure. If Washington would get the hell out of the way, and the states shouldn't send Washington all this money, because Washington is just a useless, needless, very expensive middleman doling our money back to us, when that money should remain in the states so the states can deal with their roads and bridges and even the schools. Even though I don't like to see schools run by government, as much decentralization as possible is always good, because it takes more power out of the hands of the feds. It decentralizes it among the states. And then within the states, it should be as decentralized as possible. So if I were to appraise myself right now, I think I'm doing pretty well so far. It's not really easy to wing it, but I have a few notes in front of me, and I'm speaking off the top of my head because I can. And there's many subjects I can cover, multitasking topics, I guess, if you will. So, and here's another thing that gets me about Obama's jobs program. You know, he talks a lot about the infrastructure, those kind of jobs, shovel-ready jobs. Well, what about all the massive number of unemployed females out there? Are they going to have all these shovel-ready jobs too? No, because most women prefer to work in clean, safe environments. Of course, there's exceptions, but for the most part, most women want to work in clean, safe environments. How do I know this? Well, I've not only read it, but I've asked a lot of friends or even sometimes strangers at random. True or false, that women generally want to live, want to work in clean, safe environments? And the answer is overwhelmingly yes. So based on my own research, I believe that is really what it is. And so, again, this was addressing to all the unemployed females out there, you know, and a lot of that work would be clerical or secretarial or perhaps retail. You know, what about them, Mr. President? So, and with all of this bad news about the economy going on and this stirring up more war, that's what really troubled me last week about this supposed Iranian attempt or trying to set up an attempt on the Saudi ambassador's life. I mean, this all leads up to more war. Is that supposed to distract the American people? Or if we get into another war, is that supposed to distract us and take us further away from our problems at home? I mean, how could they possibly want to do this when it'll run up the debt even more? We'll be more indebted to China. And as I like to say, more war is only going to contribute to more suffering for our military and our vets. As I speak, military suicides are at an all-time high. There are massive numbers of divorces going on with our military. There's massive occurrences of spousal abuse. And then there's probably hundreds of thousands of homeless vets, including, of course, Vietnam vets. So it's just going to make everything worse. There's no reason for more war. It only benefits the state. the central state, the central government, which is already weakening, and it's trying to protect itself even more. And you see what it's resorting to. So these riots are breaking out everywhere, including in Europe and whatnot. But it's also, it shows the failure and the collapse of the welfare state. It can't be maintained. So where I disagree, obviously, with these, the Wall Street crowd is the occupiers, is when they want to tax the rich a lot more. Of course, the rich that I don't like are the military-industrial complex crowd and these bankers who have been bailed out. That's the rich that I don't like. But as far as wanting to tax everybody else or redistribute the wealth, they haven't got a clue about economics. I wonder how many of these people out there have ever read a free market economics book, because they say and they advocate things that are just, you know, crazy from an economics standpoint. So now today, Ron Paul laid out his plan to cut $1 trillion his first term in office, and it was quite good. I listened to it. There's a few things I would have added to it, like I've spoken about in the past. I don't think he mentioned the drug war, the DEA. He wants to cut back certain agencies. I don't know how you can do that without Congress. But he's right about cutting back drastically, and especially about overseas foreign aid, the wars. Even the Republicans are waking up about the wars and seeing how expensive it is and what it's doing to our country, bankrupting, further bankrupting our country. So he's right, as usual, about the wars. He's been right about everything, pretty much. So I guess he was asked last week, I heard this somewhere, that, you know, what about food stamps? And he said, well, something defective, the way things are, you know, it's part of the system with all these unemployed people and poor people out there, you know, let's not tinker with that. Let's not, you know, take that away from people. And I don't want to do that either. I don't want to take people's Social Security away. I don't want to take their Medicare or Medicaid away. I do want to see it reformed ultimately in a market-based way. And as far as the less fortunate or the really poor people, as far as healthcare, I'd much rather have them get a voucher so they can set up their own private medical savings accounts. And if there's to be any welfare, it should come from the states, not the federal government. So each state can handle aid to its needy people, because all poverty is local. All crime is local. All pollution is local. Instead of sending all this money to Washington, it would remain in the states. I think Ron Paul spoke about giving block grants back to the states and letting them spend the money to deal with what they need to do with their people. And I hope that states wouldn't attract other states' populations with offering too lavish of a welfare benefits, because welfare and help for the poor and less fortunate should ultimately come privately. It should come from private donations from people. But if government's going to be involved in it, it should be at the local, county, and state level, not the federal government. That's how I see it, as a way to decentralize. And then with a proper economic system, you're going to have less poverty anyway. You're going to have more employment. And the poor folks and the politicians and the bureaucrats and the masses need to know that other destructive things that harm the poor, especially the, you know, minority teenagers, are minimum wage laws, because they price people out of work, and unions support them because they coast above them with their pay. But, you know, a lot of people might not be worth $7.35 an hour, or whatever the current rate. They might only be worth $4 or $5 an hour. I mean, it's one of the worst cases of government price fixing. Why should employers have to pay a wage that's dictated by government? Yet if private sector people are accused of price fixing, well, for them, that's a crime. But when the government does it, it's not crime. It's just policy. So it's just, you know, it's ridiculous. And Ron Paul, his speech went over quite well today. I wish that they would have had a microphone on the people who were asking the questions after he spoke. Now, tomorrow night is the second, not the second, is another, yet another Republican debate. I think this one's in Las Vegas. And I really hope that Dr. Paul hits it out of the park. He took a pretty firm stance today. You know, I want to see him get some more cojones, more balls, and take a stance. I mean, if I was him, I'd start off by saying, you know, when they introduce, when he comes up, when it's your turn to speak, you know, I would say, I'm Congressman Ron Paul from Texas, and I continue to receive the largest campaign donations from the active military, more than all of my presidential opponents combined. And I also receive more military donations than President Obama. So that speaks volumes. And I also saw some neat footage of YouTube where Ron Paul has won some of these straw polls or come in second, like in Iowa. And the pundits, especially Fox and CNN, you know, I just want to punk slap them. They say, well, this doesn't – straw polls don't really matter, you know. But yet when Herman Cain wins one, it shows like when Herman Cain or Bachman, then it's such a big deal. They're all talking about it. When Ron Paul does it, they try to marginalize him. And I was concerned when I caught Saturday Night Live a bit of it when they do this thing on the Republican debates usually after every one, and it showed, you know, them mimicking and lampooning the other ones pretty well, the other candidates. But when they came to Ron Paul, I thought, oh no. So he's, you know, they have him standing in a parking lot, in sort of like underground parking somewhere. He's just standing there, and then this white van pulls up to him behind him. And these guys get out and drag him into the van, and they slam the sliding door shut. And you hear this, you know, fighting going on for a few seconds, and then the door opens up, van door opens up, and Ron Paul walks out, and one of the thugs is laying sort of inside the van on his back with his arm out. So Ron Paul kicks some butt on these guys, all of them. And they got their butts kicked. So it was pretty cool. And you get a lot of applause for that. So I like that. It said he's still something like not going anywhere, but still standing strong or something like that. That was the that was what was said about that. And I thought that was pretty cool. So I'm glad that they didn't, they treated him right on that because he doesn't usually get the respect that he deserves, but he's been so consistent. So, you know, I'm optimistic about where this is going. People keep saying he can't win. Well, if everybody who thought that way, or he won't get the nomination, if everybody who believed that voted for him or supported him, he would win. And I'm proud to say that I worked on Dr. Paul's 1988 campaign. I was manning a booth, handing out literature and answering questions. And, you know, I had the bumper stickers, doing all I could to support Dr. Paul, whom I think is the most capable presidential candidate ever with his take on history and economics. You know, he should have said at the last debate, he should have told us and his audience and his opponents that, and, you know, here I am in this debate, and I'm the only real economist here. This debate is about the economy, yet I am the only free market economist here, here before you. So amongst all those candidates, he's the only real economist, and I contend, rightly so, of course, that a president should be a free market economist. He should have a serious overview of the economy because economics integrates many things together. And what complicates economics, other than like the physical sciences, you know, for math and science, physics, calculus, biology, chemistry, you don't have pressure from special interest groups all wanting, you know, their squeaky wheel greased, favors, handouts, privilege, subsidies. So that's what complicates economics. And Ron Paul is Teflon-like about that. You know, he spoke to some Latin groups, I think, last week, and he gave them the same answer. He goes, I don't, you know, I make the same speech for everyone. I don't have any special privileges or favors to give any different ethnic groups, you know, something to this effect. And he's right. He's very consistent. He doesn't show favoritism or handouts. He's objective, you know, for the whole country. It's not about this group or that group. It's about respecting individual rights. Now, I, of course, I don't agree with Dr. Paul on abortion or euthanasia. As far as euthanasia, especially if people have it, on video or, formally done legally, whatever their wishes are, I can never imagine telling anyone or prohibiting anyone, especially adults, especially if they're suffering or in terminal disease or, much stress and as sad as all that is, I can't even imagine of depriving them of their right to maintain their dignity and check out of this world in any way they see fit. Okay, and my second one is I don't agree with Dr. Paul on abortion. I believe that it should be legal with absolutely no tax money. Should be never one penny of taxes going to any abortion. And it should be, first trimester only. And there are no late-term abortions. And like I always say, I will become pro-life as soon as God and or nature stops with all the heartbreaking miscarriages. That's how I see that. So I'm not going to bicker with Dr. Paul over this or the pro-life crowd because I just believe that there's too much opposition to it and it'll never be settled and that it just has to remain, as some would call, a necessary evil. That's how I see it. It remains legal first trimester with no tax funding. And I don't see what the big deal about abortion is anyway. There's, 25 million people unemployed? Got much bigger fish to fry. Abortion rights, to me, take a far back seat to the economy and what's going on. And so I don't want to tax the rich more or tax corporations more. In fact, I want to detax them and detax everybody else. Get rid of the federal income tax and withholding taxes. Dr. Paul would cut all the young people loose from Social Security. We'll take care of our benefits for the elderly and those people who have, entitled to it, paid into it. And also take care of our veterans benefits, of course. But we're going to cut the young people free so they can invest in investment of their choice or do what they want with their money. It's their money. And he was asked about the Bush program. Well, Bush tried to privatize Social Security by letting the government deal with it somehow. And, we're not – Dr. Paul doesn't support that. He didn't support it then. He doesn't support it now. We don't want them involved in it. Look what the mess they've caused with Wall Street. So why would we want the feds involved in Social Security? Look what a mess they've made out of it. It was never meant to be a retirement. It was meant to supplement retirement. It was actually FDR's vote-buying scheme. It will go broke. It's terribly managed. Both parties, especially Democrats, have raided it to use it for other funding. I can't believe that they would do that. That's pretty much unconscionable, but that's how they roll. They continue to do these sort of things. Let's see, I got an email here. Oh, it's about the gold. Okay. Where was I? Okay, back to Ron Paul's position program today that his statement, his policy about cutting $1 trillion. And as I understand it, he's also going to cut the corporate tax to 15%, which I still think is too high. In my world, it's 2%. And that's not because I'm pro-business. I'm pro-free enterprise. I don't want privilege for business or labor. But if you had a 2% tax rate for business, it would create quite an outpouring. It would welcome industry. It would welcome foreign investment. Come on, Europe and Asia, invest your money over here. And also America. We've got serious micro taxes. And as a result of these micro taxes, we have a growing, thriving economy. And so, 15% is better than whatever it is now. I forget if it's 28 or 35 or whatever it is. Smaller is better. I'm not into Herman Cain's 999 BS. For that, I answer in German, I believe it's NEI, 9, 9, 9, no, it's heading towards the VAT. Of course, Herman Cain is just another neocon. He's a shill for the status quo. He's pro-war, he's pro-empire, he's pro-Federal Reserve, pro-TARP, pro-Israel, mean, I wanted to puke when he said his policy on Israel is, you mess with Israel, you mess with me. You know, because as I like to say on this show, because I'm very critical of Israel and Zionism, Israel is not our 51st state. And nowhere in the United States Constitution does it call for the American taxpayers to endlessly fund Israel with foreign aid and free American-made murder weapons, an endless supply of those American-made murder weapons. And of course, I would cut off, as Ron Paul would, he would cut off foreign aid to all other countries. Because like he says, I love this analogy, you have lower-income people in America taxed to give foreign aid to foreign countries with poor people, but it actually goes to rich people. So you have poorer people in America taxed to give foreign aid to rich people in foreign countries. These rich people in foreign countries, including Israel, I mean, they get this aid, props up inefficient industries, or other countries, props up dictatorships, and just maintains the status quo. Plus, it depresses farm prices. Because in these foreign countries, if these people, these poor folks, if they receive a lot of foreign aid in terms of food, it also hurts the local farmers. Now, I know some people are desperate for food. They need food. But in countries where there's a more, you know, a stronger agricultural system going on, as long as it's not very socialized, this foreign aid gets in the way. We're better off without foreign aid. Because when you look at what foreign aid does, and it's not constitutional to do that, when you look at what foreign aid does, again, it props up inefficient industries. We reward the countries we like or who toe the line, the feds do, and then the countries that the federal government doesn't like, those are the ones it bombs. Apparently, Israel's manufacturing a lot of drones. Other countries will soon have drones if they don't already. But hopefully they won't use them as indiscriminately as the U.S. They've been hitting targets in Yemen and still in Pakistan. I mean, where else are they going to do this with? And with no constitutional authority. And believe me, it won't be long until they're doing it to the U.S. within our borders. Now, they might not be bombing us much with drones, although I wouldn't be surprised. They probably would have done it to Waco. But they'll be using them for more surveillance. But I don't know how long this is going to last because I see more unrest next year. It's an election year. I see more discomfort with people. Thank goodness there are Tea Party folks and Ron Paul folks at these Occupy Wall Street, with these Occupy Wall Street crowds to lend some sanity to it all. But then you have, I guess, especially the Obama administration, they are using Occupy Wall Street to their benefit to aim it against the rich and aim it against Wall Street when the hypocrisy of it all is overwhelming. Because Obama, as I understand it, I think I heard this on CNN tonight, if not Fox, but you know, of course they speak in a lot of half-truths and lies and whatnot, but I think they were spot on about this, whereas Obama received more than any other presidential candidate in history from Wall Street in his campaign. But now they're holding back a bit. And it's this whole uncertainty thing that people feel. Small business, too, it's this uncertainty about, well, what the hell is the government going to do next? You know, what's their tax policy going to be? How much more are they going to overregulate the economy? You know, like Ron Paul said, what needs regulate? The government needs more regulation on itself. You know, that's the problem. It reminds me of Ayn Rand's saying, which I have on my license plate, which says Ayn Rand, but on the framework it says, who will protect us from our protectors? And so, you know, and the government gets away whatever it wants to do, it does. It does what it wants. I believe it's government by the government, of the government, for the government. It's just a myth, the government of the people, especially nowadays, you know. As I'm fond of saying, the government, you know, politicians and bureaucrats, they listen to us only as a courtesy, and then they do whatever they want. Again, if anybody wants to call in, the number is 888-429-5471. So apparently there's a lot of protests in other cities too. I don't know where it's going to come from, what it's going to lead to. But I'll tell you what, if they were unified and they had a message based on liberty, property, and peace, sound money, sound government management, which means living within their means, not spending more than they take in, and doing their the minimal things that governments are supposed to do is to protect our rights, enforce contracts, you know, those sort of things. If they would stay in those parameters, then, you know, we'd be much better off. But again, I don't think that I don't think Washington can be reformed. If Ron Paul doesn't get in, it's going to be just more of the same. Tweedledee and Tweedledum. You know, the one government party with two heads, or the one bird of prey with two wings. They basically agree on everything except how much to spend. And even that despicable Carol Quigley, who was one of Clinton's heroes, who wrote Tragedy and Hope, Carol Quigley was a writer who was allowed to examine and study and read a lot of the documents of the world government crowd back, I believe, in the 60s, the Rockefeller crowd, the Rothschild crowd. He was allowed to examine their documents, and he agreed with it all. He just thought it should have been more open, you know. So he was an advocate of that, and that's when he wrote Tragedy and Hope and another book or two. And this was one of Clinton's heroes. It was one of professors too. But he said, Carol Quigley said that, you know, the status quo, the Illuminati, if you will, I don't think he didn't use that term, but that crowd, the globalists, they want you to think that there's a difference between the parties when they control both of them and they manipulate both of them. And they, so that it doesn't really matter who gets in, it's already set up. And that's why they loathe and they fear Ron Paul, because he can't be bought or sold. I just hope that, you know, if he does go all the way, that they won't harm him or suicide him, as the CIA will do, you know, take down a whole plane just to get one person. So, and at this point in my show, if the CIA is out there and the FBI and their other buddies, I welcome you to call in. I'd like to talk to you. I'd like to ask you why you've infiltrated the universities, the media. You're in all the state governments. You're everywhere. They talk about the Klan as the invisible empire or invisible army, whatever. It's you guys, CIA, Cocaine Importation Agency. And, of course, in Afghanistan, yes, there are some there is some destruction of some of the poppy fields going on, but it's just a facade. Yeah, sure, they destroy some, but poppy production's at an all-time high in Afghanistan. There's poppy fields guarded by British and American troops. CIA uses this money. They use it to fund their special ops and programs that Congress won't give them the money for. And I always wonder, where does the CIA get its marching orders? Is it an entity unto its own? For some reason, I don't think they get it from the White House. I would just love to know where they get their marching orders from. But I guess there's hope, because I sure like the fact that, you know, former CIA agents, then they write tell-all books or whatever they can, as long as they're not killed. But, of course, they have to either resign or retire before they can do this. There's several authors who have done this. One I really like, and I don't know how far he's crossed, the late, great Chalmers Johnson, talked about American Empire and CIA involvement. You know, I guess a lot of these guys wake up after they leave the agency, and apparently has, you know, there's two wings to the CIA. There's the information intelligence gathering wing, which I don't have too much of a problem with, but then there's their special ops, overthrow governments, infiltrate governments, this crowd that does a lot of the killing and the drug running. And, you know, their drug running goes back 40, 45 years, if not even, you know, before that. So, and George Bush Sr. is deeply involved in this. Of course, he was the head of the CIA. So, you know, one hand, the federal government's importing illegal drugs. And the other hand, they're trying to, you know, crush, implement the drug war, which the trouble with the drug war is the drug addiction by the politicians, the bureaucrats, and the cops who want to keep it going because they like all the goodies and the extra money and revenues they're getting out of it, especially the cops, because they're getting more militarized. And it's just awful, the police behavior. You can see it all over the internet. They're taser happy. They manufacture evidence. They plant drugs on people. They're not the friendly cop they used to be, and people fear them more. And they're heavily militarized. I mean, I don't trust the bastards. I don't like cops. They enforce a lot of laws that shouldn't even exist. And they're just pricks about stuff. If I was a cop, I couldn't even enforce probably half these laws. I just wouldn't do it. It's just ridiculous. Of course, they wouldn't want me. They don't want anybody who knows anything. So that's why I wasn't selected for jury duty. When I was called several years ago, I went down three days in a row. And 3 days in a row, I wasn't chosen. And in retrospect, I shouldn't have answered the way I did when I was called on, because they asked me if I had any trouble with people using a gun in a crime, or people with guns, gun ownership. And I said, well, I support the complete Bill of Rights. Well, right away, black mark against me. I knew something, so they don't want this guy. So they crossed me off. Next time I would play dumb. And, of course, I've already done shows about jury nullification. My mind's already made up as a juror. If it's for nonviolent drug crimes, taxes, if it was prostitution, gambling, internet gambling, you know, not guilty. And I would also try to convince the jury that this isn't necessary either, and that they can vote their conscience by having fully informed juries. Which that is something that should be in our political dialogue, and it should be required that judges inform jurors of their rights to judge the laws. They might not be able to change the laws, although eventually jury nullification could change bad, useless laws, but jurors can vote their conscience. So, and I'm not talking about arson, rape, murder, you know, these horrendous crimes. We're not talking about letting those people off. Although, of course, in a crime like that, if you think somebody's not guilty of murder or arson or rape, then you vote your conscience. But I wouldn't go in with a preconceived notion on those type of cases. But if it's nonviolent drugs or drug possession, prostitution, gambling, not guilty, baby. That's how I see it. Because the jury should be the most powerful entity in a courtroom, because the jury represents the people. The judge represents the state. So that's why jurors should play a larger role. And then as far as incarceration and prisons go, I don't have a problem with privatizing prisons per se, because in my world, there would be no victimless crime laws. The prisons would not be full of nonviolent drug users or sellers. There would be no prostitutes in prison. There would be no people in there for gambling. Prison would only be for violent, hardened criminals. So if we had private prisons in that situation, or privatized prisons doing business, I guess, you know, I wouldn't mind taxes paying for prisons. They would be, you know, contracted out by government. In my limited government view of things. So I'm not an anarchist, I'm a minarchist. And I don't see much of a conflict between me and anarchists. I mean, anarchists, anarcho-capitalists would be very happy with the system I would lay out, as I have previously with my secession solution. And incidentally, here I would like to congratulate myself, because this month I've been hosting this show for about a year now. And I've learned more about talking about the issues and interviewing people, so I like to continue. The biggest challenge is getting good guests on, and as I said tonight, my guest had to back out. And I don't get upset with people when they do this. I mean, his was sort of a last minute thing, and I mean, I'm unhappy about it, but there's nothing I can do about it. I'm not going to vibe people about it. If something comes up, you know, I get it. you know. So, but I've enjoyed doing it, and I like to do some of the research, and I like some of the humor that's involved, and just the fact that I challenge myself to see how well I can hang in there. I just haven't had a shot at a bigger chance yet. I'd like to take this further, and I haven't really clashed with anybody. That's why I would like to take some calls. I haven't clashed with anybody about the things I stand for. I especially when I clash with somebody who's very pro-Israel or pro-Zionist. That's the fight I'm looking for, and also anybody about foreign policy. Because most of the people I interview, we agree on most things. So that's my take on that. Now I see that the clock is winding down here for my show, and I must tell myself that I'm patting myself on the back here. PK, you done a good job. So I'm going to wind down here because I've stated enough brilliance for one show. So I hope you've enjoyed listening, the multitudes of you that are out there. And I'm here every Monday evening, 8:55 Pacific, 10:55 Central, and 11:55 Eastern on bbsradio.com, station 2, where we discuss the events of the day, politics, economics, music, health, many interesting topics, and there's no censorship, and I don't cut people off, and I let the criticism fly or let the ideas fly, and I don't wet my pants and tell somebody, oh, you're anti-Semitic or you're a racist. We don't roll that way here on Third Stream View. So until next week, this is your wonderful, not so humble, fearless, enlightened host, PK, signing off and saying, see you next week, everyone, and thanks for tuning in to Third Stream View. Good night, everybody.